This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. If you happen to have a teenage daughter, I have some bad news for you. She's in love, and in love with somebody who really isn't right for her. He's moody, he's kind of a loner, and he's dead. Or maybe this isn't news to you. The box office smash hit right now is Twilight, which is based on the insanely popular series of young adult novels.
How old are you?
17.
How long have you been 17?
A while.
I know what you are.
Say it out loud.
Vampire.
Twilight's about a teenage girl who falls for a handsome, brooding young vampire. Not unlike HBO's new series, True Blood.
Hi, what can I get for you tonight?
Do you have any of that synthetic bottled blood?
No, I'm so sorry. Sam got some a year ago, but nobody ever ordered it, so it went bad. You're our first vampire.
So why don't vampires ever go out of style? Studio 360's Peter Crimmins has some thoughts.
Sunlight or a silver bullet? Garlic or the blood of a virgin? Vampire stories can quibble over details, but they all come with these lists of conditions. Bram Stoker created the most enduring incarnation of a vampire in 1896 when his novel Dracula was published, but even then, vampires were well established in English literature. For centuries, readers have been swooning over the sensuality of the bite, the biohazard of exchanged blood, and these creatures who, for eternity, will be social outcasts.
They make good metaphors for all sorts of things. For instance, my character in her world, she's the first black vampire.
That is the late Octavia Butler. In the fall of 2005, she published her last novel, Fledgling. It's about a genetically altered vampire whose dark skin allows her to walk by day, a bit like Wesley Snipes in Blade. Octavia Butler knew what it meant to be seduced by a vampire.
I had a long writer's block due to some heart medication that I was taking. And I needed something that would kind of draw me in on an emotional basis as well as an intellectual basis. Vampires did it. I wound up reading a really badly written vampire book. But I read it all the way through, and I thought, why did I do that?
Even Bram Stoker felt the same ineffable attraction that Octavia Butler did. His notebooks are at the Rosenbach Library in Philadelphia, and in them, you can see the moment he struck upon the name Dracula. He was researching a 15th century Romanian warlord named Dracul, and he put a little spin on the name. And then he wrote that name down over and over and over in his notes. Dracula, 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 Dracula. He was like a love-struck junior high school girl scribbling down the name of a new boy. When Stoker wrote his novel, he was living in a small seaport town on the eastern coast of England called Whitby. Whitby even appears in the novel as Count Dracula's port of entry into England. It's prone to thick, moody fogs and dominated by the ruin of a 7th century abbey built by Saxons and perched high on a sea cliff above the town. This is where Count Dracula took his first British victim.
There are times of the year where if you are on the West Cliff, you can look across to the Abbey and see the sun shining through the windows, bright red.
I met Rebecca Gross of the Whitby Dracula Society in the Abbey's tea house.
It's only ever happened to me once or twice, and it actually does give you that shivers because you think, that's what he saw. That's Dracula. Forget the rest. That image of the sun shining through the abbey is Dracula. And it does kind of give you a weird feeling.
That weird feeling from the 7th century abbey might explain the appeal of vampires better than Stoker's rather thick novel. For all its gothic appeal, the book can be overlong, repetitive, and burdened with Victorian tedium. In fact, some members of the Whitby Dracula Society haven't even bothered to read Dracula. But what Stoker did well was imagine the right monster at the right time.
The other characters are progress and technology and modernity and the new regime mirroring the 18th century enlightenment.
This is 1896, and Bram Stoker's characters are on the cusp of the 20th century. They are Victorians who want to be modern. They use typewriters. They record their voices on wax cylinder dictaphones. They practice psychology. And then something comes up from behind, something ancient from the East, and nibbles on their neck.
This was going to be the great new golden age of independence and free thought, in the way that people have always hoped. There will be a great new age of independence and free thought. Dracula is evil. He is the evil of all that's gone by.
Bram Stoker did write other horror novels, but Dracula was his one-hit wonder. To this day, a century later, the story of Dracula is still being unpacked in countless ways, usually pairing bloody violence with forbidden sex. Nina Auerbach laments that stories in recent years have swung in favor of the sexy bits rather than the violent bits. This professor of English literature at the University of Pennsylvania and the author of Our Vampires Ourselves says vampires are more effective when they're not treated like tragic lovers.
Well, I think we need an awareness that they kill people and they take away your free will. They're predators.
Auerbach believes vampires can serve as useful models for fears that continue to dog our modern world, like Osama bin Laden.
I mean, aside from being foreign and evil, and he's sort of here, he's sort of there, he's everywhere, no one knows where he is. I mean, Osama bin Laden has all these acolytes and people who do his bidding, like the vampire servants. He's just like Dracula. And it's unimaginable what he could do to us. I mean, actually, he's very scary. But so are vampires.
If Bram Stoker didn't invent Dracula, someone else would have had to. As we waltz into the 21st century, we need to keep an eye on Dracula's steps so we know what to be afraid of. For Studio 360, I'm Peter Crimmins.